Can I have some
mineral
water?
Do we have any apple juice?
No, there's orange juice. There's fresh orange juice.
I'll have some orange juice. Actually, can I have some orange juice?
Yeah, I don't know why we put orange juice on it, but I can juice.
Oh.
Seventeenth of June, 2011. Dear all, up until today, Russell and I have been seeing chest specialists in nicely kitted out private offices, trying to get this thing diagnosed. Most of you know that the news hasn't been great. So today we saw the oncologist at Gloucester House, RPA. We knew we'd entered a different sort of space. That hospital smell, the crazed admission staff, and the unwell wrapped in headscarves, their faces twitching with tension and exhaustion that we instantly recognised.
Doors closing, level 3. Going up.
Well, said Russell, this is where the rubber hits the road. He looked calm. I had to go to the bathroom to put my head between my knees to stop a panic attack. There was, of course, a queue. Chemo starts on Thursday, and we feel okay about it because there's finally something happening, with dates and times and steps to be taken. We like a process. It feels safe to be in the jaws of the system. There's a 1 in 4 chance of survival. And someone's got to be the one, don't they?
So, tell me about
your day. We did brush stroke in the swimming pool, and we went up to the big deck.
June 30th. Russell's just been through the first week of chemo. It was like the apocalypse. The chemotherapy they're giving him is a drug called cisplatin. They pump it into his system through an IV, and it's in a black bag to denote just how poisonous it is. The nurses who have to change the bag do so in protective gowns, gloves, and masks. There's nothing subtle about the cancer ward. All they need is a skull and crossbones. He came home tired, but okay. But on the third day after treatment, he went downhill fast. Intense nausea and fatigue meant that eating, drinking, sleeping, talking were all too much. He told me he just wanted to die. Hard to hear from a person with lung cancer. I rang the hospital and the nurse told me that he really needed to come in and be put on a saline drip to rehydrate him. She also told me this was not a possibility as all the beds were taken. She suggested water with a teaspoon of sugar and salt in lieu of the saline drip. He couldn't face it. A week after the first dose, he had to go in again. This time it was just for an hour for a drug that's not as toxic as the cisplatin. Except it wasn't an hour because we'd forgotten that we had to go in early to get his blood checked to see if he was up for it. While we were waiting, I found the doctor and told him how sick Russell had been. I told him about the 5 kilo weight loss, the nausea, and he nodded his head and I realised that none of this was shocking him. It's standard on the cancer ward. On the drive out from the cancer centre, you pass the new maternity hospital. And when I see those couples coming out of the building with their new babies, I feel a shock of envy at the idea of being in hospital for something so wonderful. I wonder at the idea of building a place for new life so close to a building that's not exactly dedicated to the end of life, but certainly to the intense tussle for it. But maybe birth and parenthood is a tussle of its own. July 6th. When I'm on my lunch break at work, I sometimes see a woman who hangs around the streets with a fluffy white dog in a stroller asking for money. If you tell her you can't help, she says,
"So you'd rather see me and my dog out on the streets, would you?"
And you say, "Well, no, but I don't have any cash." And she starts yelling, and you're sort of stuck. She trapped me the other day as I was walking back with my coffee, and she did her thing, and I told her that I honestly didn't have any money. She started laying into me, and eventually I said, quietly, shakily, "My husband has lung cancer." She looked at me for a moment and said,
"I don't even have a fucking husband, you bitch."
July 13th. A friend emailed this week and asked me if I needed some help. Lots of people have asked the same question, and I felt too confused and too tired to answer properly. But there in the email, she'd listed all the things that people might be able to do for me. And she offered to coordinate their efforts. For the first time, I could see a way through trying to do this by myself. I sent an email out to some Glebe locals telling them what I needed, and within a few hours I had dinners organised, help with the girls, lifts to chemo treatments for Russell on the days I have to work, an online account for shopping, two cleaners, and a Google calendar to keep everyone up to date. I'm not sure if Russell quite realises that the house is now being run from a few strategic points in the Inner West. Apparently, just like a child, it takes a village to organise cancer treatment. I'm grateful, really, but it's hard too, because you give up your ideas about being able to manage regardless, about being the perfect mother and wife. If only I were stronger, calmer, better, I could do this. But of course, being able to let go of those ideas is part of this process. We need help. And even though surrendering might be difficult, it's less difficult than trying to push through alone. Love, Soph.
We played Murder Wing.
So.
Who's that?
It's where there's one detective that closes the back of the room and they do like they have to face the wall.
Yeah.
And then all the people in the circle, they have to close their eyes. Then Mr. Carpenter picks someone on the head, then the person so that they know has to try spotting someone, and then the murderer has to sort of put their tongue out at the person, and so they die.
Hmm. Dear, oh dear.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to Mr. Carpenter today.
July 20th. I said to him the other day that he needed to drink up his sugary, salty water solution I'd prepared to keep his hydration and electrolyte levels up. Yeah, he snapped. "Do you talk that way to the nurses?" I asked. "No. But I don't love the nurses." It's not exactly champagne and roses, but it helped me to remember that I'm not a nurse, and that with all the caring and managing of this illness, I am in fact loved. At the centre of this mess is us, two people who love each other, and with us are two children who are frightened but who essentially just love their dad. And there's a man who's not a patient, but my husband and their father. We're accepting all positive thoughts and vibes and prayers. Thank you for your continuing emails, texts and calls. If you hear nothing back from me, please know it's not through a lack of appreciation. July 27th. This week, Russell was admitted to hospital with a temperature. The doctors had said that a fever meant that he had to come into emergency in case it meant that he'd picked up some sort of infection. People had told me that this is fairly par for the course, but I never thought it would happen to us. I think it's like childbirth. People tell you it hurts just when you have your ears blocked with your fingers and you're singing loudly la la la, and then it hurts and you can't believe the pain. I guess I didn't want to know. He stayed in overnight in the hospital, and the next morning he was desperate to come home. He hadn't slept, he was panicked and frightened, and he didn't want another night like that. The doctor had been to see him, saying that to leave would be against medical advice. Russell wanted me to bust him out. I told Russell that I thought he should stay. I could see he felt betrayed. We didn't talk much. Mum brought the girls in for a visit. Anna put on a hospital gown and did a fabulous performance of a sick person. Claire looked uncomfortable and sad, even though he held her tight. In trying to explain why he was in hospital, Russell said to Anna, "I think what happened is I just caught your cold." As soon as he said it, he wanted to take it back. I wanted to tell her that it wasn't her cold at all, that special tests came back and showed, I don't know. I don't want to lie to her. The fact is, she had a cold and he may have caught it, but he may have caught it from anyone. Or maybe it was just a spike in his temperature, and really, it doesn't matter. I've tried to put her mind at ease that no one blames her, but I can see it working through her brain and I hope she can let it go. I did say that Grandma also had a cold, and it may have been that. She felt okay blaming Grandma. Sorry, Mum. August 10th. Our life is pretty good, said Russell. On our way back from lunch on the harbour, the sun shining and the taste of good coffee on our lips. You get to go to lunch, and every night someone comes and brings you dinner. You get to play on the iPad all day. Lots of people babysitting the kids. Shame about the lung cancer. August 17th. Lying in bed at night, you can smell the chemo treatment. Heavy metals leaching out of his system. He feels awful. And I've been saying stupid things like, "You seem better than yesterday," or "last week." Because I'm willing it to be true. And I'm trying to be positive. But I know there's a fine line between being positive and irritating, and I don't want him to feel I'm dismissing how bad he feels, partly because I'm not dismissing how bad he feels, and partly because I wish I could. Claire has an aching shoulder. I've tried to massage it, but she doesn't want me to touch it. I think it's the same tension and fear that I see behind her eyes. But I can't push her to give me the answer that I want, or to talk to me. I ask her about her dad, and she mumbles that it's all fine. Then she leaves the room. August 25th. Russell has been managing his nausea with steroids, which doesn't endear him to anyone. He gets into this awful mood around 6 at night, and the girls and I find it really difficult to manage. It lasts a couple of hours, and though there's no fist through the walls or smashing of plates, his gruffness and bad temper is very hard to take. He's got a sharpness and a curl of the lips that we find painful. A few nights ago, after a spat about who may have changed the settings on the iPad, Anna and I went for a walk and she said, "I wish he wasn't so sick." I was glad she'd connected his terrible mood to his illness, although I really wish she'd stop changing the settings on the iPad. "And while we're on being angry, could I have an egg flip?" he croaked. "You smoked for 20 years. Make your own goddamn egg flip." Did I say that out loud? No, I didn't. I got him the egg flip. And I got it for him because he's sick, truly sick. And he has done so much for me, and I owe him and I love him, and I'd walk miles over broken glass if I could make him well again. But I am angry. I'm angry at him for smoking, and at tobacco companies, and those people who sit outside the cancer centre smoking. Really? The cancer centre? You can't do it somewhere else? I'm angry at all the 90-year-olds who smoke a pack a day and have nothing wrong with their lungs, and with the doctors who can't make this better. I'm angry that our lives will never be the same, and that part of him is lost. September 5th. Hi all. Some of you know that the last test results were not good and that the chemo Russell went through didn't work. The cancer has spread through the lymph nodes in the lung. Since getting this news, writing these updates, which has given me so much focus, suddenly seems undoable. Russell is much better at this than I am. He's a step-by-step man and just keeps going. I feel like I'm in shock once again, the way I did when we found out he had cancer. And the pain in my chest that I developed is back. It feels corny to say that it's a broken heart, but that's what it feels like. When the doctor told us, Russell took the information in, nodded his head, asked sensible questions. I stood up and paced the room like some sort of trapped and wounded animal. They told us that radiotherapy will start in a few weeks. Russell's hanging on to it. Claire turned 11 the other day. She's keeping this deep within her, and she won't talk about it, doing her best to ignore it. But on her birthday, she was so very fragile, so very little. And with all the gifts we gave her, it didn't change the fact that her father might be dying. Love, Sophie. October 3rd. Anna held a fruit kebab stall on the main road to raise money for her dad's chemo. I asked her not to say it was for his chemo. I hope she didn't. At least she didn't make the sign, "Please help my daddy's chemo," spelt K-E-M-O, that she wanted to. She raised $7. It cost me $10 in fruit. I let her give her father the cash. It was easier than trying to explain the Medicare system. October 14th. Dear all, last weekend, he and I had a spat. You don't need to know what it was about, but it was my fault. That's right, I picked a fight with a cancer patient. It didn't last long, but it struck me that it was the first argument we've had since this all started. It made me think about how well we've been doing. I'm proud of him. That even in the worst moments, he's known that this is about me and the girls too. And he's been as supportive of me as possible and as active a father as he's been able to be. I'm proud of the girls for their kindness and loveliness towards their father and their help in this. And I'm proud of myself too. That I've managed to grit my teeth a lot and keep this thing afloat. We lie in bed at night and he clings on to me. And sometimes I feel that I can't breathe because his grip is so tight. And I know it's the fear that we both put to one side in the daylight hours that makes him hold me like that. And so I don't sleep. Because while it's unbearable, I can't bear the thought of letting him go. October 27th. Dear all, Claire and Anna are down at Coles with their dad. Even with lung cancer, he manages to shop more efficiently than me, spending less time and money and getting the stuff we actually need. I hate supermarkets. but he enjoys the weekly shopping when he's feeling up to it. I think it suits his sense of order. He likes to take the kids too, and I tend to think that he should be spending time with them watching the ocean or teaching them how to shape things out of blocks of wood. Because isn't this the time you're supposed to be talking in profound metaphors? And then I let all that go. Because he is such a good father and such a good man that if a memory is made in the frozen food section of Broadway Coles, then those children are very lucky.
I'll let you into a bit of a secret, Baby. The whole point of best and worst is to prompt conversation. It's not actually about listing off best and worst.
Oh, my best was...
Shouldn't do that.
I reckon the best would have been get the lovely burn you had after all the exercise you did yesterday.
No, that wasn't it.
That's quite good. Mm. 1, 2...
November 21st. Russell and I had our 10-year anniversary last night. We went to a fancy restaurant and I almost wouldn't go because it felt so false. But he insisted. And he had some extra morphine to keep his pain in check. And we drank champagne. And I thought, you can take both. You can hold sadness and celebration in your hands and get through. And that's what we did. It was full of tears and laughter, mainly laughter. We talked about what wonderful fun we've had together. Because we have had a great deal of fun. He had his last day of radiation today and there's a test to see if it worked early next week. Love, S. November 27th. Dear all, we've got the results of the last test and they're not good. It looks as though this is Russell's last summer. Unless. He's having a biopsy next week to see if his cancer has a certain genetic mutation that can be dealt with by a specific drug. This would make the outlook very different. There's only a 5% chance and I don't dare to hope. Russell does. He's realistic, but he does. When we got the diagnosis, I googled and found some statistic that said 25% of lung cancer patients at stage 3 survive 5 years. And I wrote that someone's got to be the 1 in 4. I no longer think that we'll be the lucky ones. I do believe that any chance makes the biopsy worth it, but I don't believe it'll work. We talk about giving up hope, as if hope has some sort of agency, as if by having hope you can change the outcome. But I don't think that's the case. I have given up hope, but I haven't given up loving him and wishing that I could have him here with us for longer. I have given up hope, but I haven't given up Russell. If the biopsy comes up with a negative result, he can go on and have a mild form of chemotherapy, which they explained has very little chance of working and would only extend his life by a few months if it did. He wants it. I've told him that I don't want him to have it, that I don't want him to spend his time sick and hooked up to a drip with that poison in it, because even the chemo light is poison. But he wants it. And I realise that in this marriage I've spent quite a lot of time trying to get my own way, and trying to prove myself right. I was right about having children. I still say I was right about the dog, despite the way she smells. I'm sure I was right that the kitchen cupboards I wanted were more practical than the ones he wanted and that we ultimately bought. But I don't care about being right about the chemo. And I will be there with him, right beside him, and I will be willing it to work. Because what he wants, he can have. A friend of ours spoke to Russell yesterday, just after we got the news. After they talked about what this all meant, Tony asked him what he was going to do now. A load of washing, said Russell. One step in front of the other. One load of washing at a time. Love, S. P.S. Russell would like to make it clear that the kitchen cupboards we have were a compromise decision and that they are perfectly acceptable. Because, you know, that's the important part of the update. December 2nd. We visited palliative care where we had to wait for 3 hours to see his doctor. He made some terrible jokes about dying to see her. It's almost summer holidays, and usually we unwind right now. I stop yelling at the children about their homework, let them watch more telly than usual, take them out of school early and go to the beach. This year, the unwinding just feels like unravelling. January 6th, 2012. Dear all, you may remember that there was one more treatment option for Russell. He was tested to see if the cancer was a genetic fit for a new drug that would help kill it off. It was a 5% chance, and we got the results a couple of days ago. It was negative. This is the end of the road. And I thought I'd been so sensible, knowing that it was only a 5% chance and not getting my hopes up, proceeding as if it wasn't even a possibility. When they told us, I felt like the earth was swallowing us whole. It seems that hope will blindside you at every turn. Then we had to tell the girls. Claire curled up in a very small ball and cried and cried and cried. Then she went to her room and cried some more. Anna cried too, but she got lost in it quite quickly and doesn't understand what it really means. She asks constant questions about whether we can be sure he'll die, whether we can keep him alive until after her birthday, because she'll be 9 and big enough then. She asks about the funeral and where it will be and what we'll do at the funeral. It's exhausting. January. He's so pale and not eating much at all. His hands are cold. He is so very sad. He says he's in denial, and I think he is, but if you can talk about denial, you can't be in fairyland. And I think his sense of reality is good. We've talked about it, and both agree that it's simply impossible to imagine your life without you in it. How would he start? I can imagine it, and I'm terrified a lot of the time. I feel angry a lot of the time. But like Anna, I find myself asking concrete questions about getting through this, like how to get the kids to school every day. Managing childcare and the shopping. I wrote out possible weekly dinner menus with lots of strategies for using leftovers. I cry a lot, usually alone. I love him so much. January 18th. Dear all, we had an appointment with the oncologist yesterday. He told us there'd be no more chemo, no more treatment. He was quite firm on this. I'm sure it's because he's used to the last appointments and the begging, the demands for one last shot at a miracle cure, but we were not there to beg. Russell asked whether we'd see him again. He said no. It felt like a last date before a very civilized and mutually agreed to breakup. And now I watched my very best friend fall away from me. I see the way people look at him, the way we used to look at the gaunt faces in Cancer Land, with a mixture of sympathy and horror and hope that it doesn't happen to you. I bought irises today. The first flowers he bought me 16 years ago. As I put them in the vase, I thought of him in his navy blue suit and tie, because he wore ties in those days, coming around to the share house I lived in and making me laugh and lecturing me on Jimi Hendrix. I remembered how from the very start I loved him. And in his lovely brown eyes I see that man. And in my children I see him too. I'll miss him. And I miss him already. Because there are parts of him that have already gone. Love, Soph. January 30. Dear all, Russell's eating a diet of ice cream, watermelon, chicken, and egg flips. We eat around that. School starts again tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to the structure it gives us. I keep thinking of all the times I've looked at other people in this situation and thought there is no way on God's earth I could do that. And here I am, doing it. He has such a sour smell to him and is so very weak and needs so much. The girls need me too because, of course, they need their mother at a time like this. So I feel like I'm being pulled in three different directions. So I keep waiting for this to be over. Which is a very hard thing to think because it's only over when he's gone. And that's why this is almost undoable. February 7. Dear all, every night lying in bed, Russell says how frightened he is to go to sleep because he may not wake up. And I say he will wake up because I'm fairly certain that he will, and because I think it's the only thing to say. And through the night, I check to see that he's still breathing. And when I hear his voice in the morning, I feel real and surprised relief. I don't want him to die, but I hold that in one hand and in the other the knowledge that we simply can't go on like this. It's no way to live, frightened of the morning. And regardless of what I want, my husband will die anyway. I don't know when, and we can't make plans, and we can't change the way it's going to go. Anna has her funeral outfit hanging on a coat hanger in the hallway. We are ready, but not really. Not really. Love, Soph. February 11. Dear all, my darling Russell died last night. He'd had a great week. He got the tree in the back garden cut back. He got some stuff tidied up. He and my mother finished writing all the details of his life down for the girls. He didn't get the haircut he'd planned, and he didn't figure out a way to store the bikes out the back. But I think mostly things were pretty much complete for him. He slipped into a coma on Friday and never came to. He felt no fear and no pain, and friends and family gathered around. His three girls, Anna, Claire, and I, were with him on his bed when he died. He died with class and a minimum of fuss. 8 months of cancer treatment and all the pain that goes with it, you don't focus on what it feels like to lose someone. There's too much to do, I suppose. Now I feel full to the brim with the lack of him. I'll be in touch about the funeral arrangements soon. Love, Soph.
My best was going on a walk with Phoebe, and my worst, oh,
maybe you should go and have a massage.
Monsieur?
No.
I would so take that opportunity.
They're not allowed to massage people under the age of 18. Do you want to go to a physio?
Yes, they are. But
no, they're not.
Yes, they are.
Wait, well, physios can, but...
I hope got LMS shaving.